Hudson, deep in the bosom of suburbia. I met a young girl, she sang mighty fine. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria.
Now, back in the late 1970s, that song took the nation by storm, became a huge hit. For our next guest on Downtown, who's had quite a remarkable year career in the years since then, Dean Friedman, singer, songwriter, and much more, joins us right now in the G&M Family Market phone line. Dean, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Rich. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you on with us. Heard you a couple of weeks ago on doing a special on Sirius XM Radio that was just fantastic. How did that all come to pass?
I got an invite to you know, lend my voice to some of their playlists. So it was a fun exercise for me because I got to think about and listen to all the singer-songwriters that I was strongly influenced by when I was starting out myself. And, I got to put together in a set and talk a little bit about those artists and those songwriters, and it was fun. I had a good time.
Well, it was very cool to listen to as well. Now, Ariel was such a big hit, and I'm sure you've been asked this a million times. Now, Ariel was she was not one person, maybe an amalgamation of several young women that you knew and admired.
Well, I have to confess, it was sort of all these teenage girls I had a crush on as I was growing up in Paramus, New Jersey, sort of squished together into one kind of idealized girl in a peasant blouse.
Well, a great song, and while it was zooming up the charts, you were working. And I remember as a very young DJ playing that song. I remember the Life Song label playing it right out of the box at the time, and that was a big hit. But the company was struggling, and like so many talented people in the music business, they weren't able to give you adequate support, and the follow-up didn't come here, but you went on to have tremendous success, especially in the United Kingdom.
And I'm grateful, even though it's a little bit of a commute getting across the pond. They're an enthusiastic audience over there, and it was one of those curious kind of circumstances of business and politics where when my second album came out, my record label here in the States was very unhappy with it. They lectured me, they brought me in and kind of berated me that I wasn't listening to anyone and I made a terrible record. But then just a few weeks after that meeting, it raced to the top of the charts in England. So it just sort of taught me to trust my instincts.
Well,
I really believed in the record, and it proved to be so.
Well, and you've been writing songs for all these years, and not only writing songs, but writing a book about it, the Songwriter's Handbook, and also doing workshops for songwriters. What's the best advice that you give to up-and-coming songwriters?
Well, I guess I would combine a few things by saying what I just said a moment ago, which is trust your instincts, but also relax and have fun. Because even though the craft of songwriting can be, you know, torturous and tedious, it's combined with the inspiration. And inspiration, you know, sometimes it's inexplicable where or how it comes. But inevitably it does come when you give yourself permission to just mess around and play to sort of fiddle around like, you know, with finger painting. You sort of get in there and you swirl those colors around. Well, the same, at least I find, is true in songwriting with words and with music. And it's that improvisational time that generates ideas and spawns those kernels of ideas that you use craft to then develop. So I guess I'd say those two things, which is sort of trust your instinct, but also have fun, trying to find a way to enjoy it and reach that zone while you're improvising that somehow sort of inexplicably allows you to express yourself in a unique way.
Now, one of the times you trusted your instincts, but others didn't so much, was on the song McDonald's Girl because of policies on the BBC. That song didn't get the airplay that it probably should have, but you ended up getting the last laugh. Can you tell the story of that?
Well, I guess there's another instinct of business and politics versus my instinct, which is I'd written this, you know, playful, fun, pure pop song, McDonald's Girl. And everyone that I played for really got a kick out of it and liked it. And so I always believed in it. But when it came out in the UK, it was officially banned by the BBC because they had and still have some strict policies about mentioning any commercial trade names, because essentially it's a government-controlled radio platform, the BBC. And so I was a little chagrined when it was officially banned, but a few years after that, a then-unknown Canadian band called Bare Naked Ladies did a cover version of it, which was their first airplay hit in Toronto. And then a band called The Blenders had a hit in Norway, went to number one. And then when YouTube came along, people all over the world started doing their own versions of McDonald's Girl and went viral. And then, I guess 30 years after I wrote the song, I finally got a call from corporate headquarters at McDonald's, and they said, you know, Mr. Friedman, we'd like to license your song for a national TV and radio campaign. So it took a while, but I was glad they finally got the point.
We're talking with Dean Friedman here on Downtown. Tell us, if you can, the inspiration for your ode to Monica Lewinsky.
Well, it didn't need much inspiration. It was, you know, during the actually, I wrote it during the Bush era when I was really frustrated by all the things that were going on. And as a, you know, as an artist, as a singer-songwriter, when you're frustrated, you try and express yourself in song. You know, I just quite literally had missed those days, which I viewed as much more innocent. Washington's, you know, most favorite intern. It's sort of a comical take on all those political scandals as compared to, you know, actual scandals. It won a People's Choice Award. It's often proposed with a website. So people got a kick out of it.
Now, you did some incredible work on synthesizers, really, before people knew what was going on there. And also, you were involved in video gaming and design. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was during a period of time after I was unceremoniously dropped by my record label, after McDonald's Girl was banned, that I got really involved learning about music synthesizers. And that led to my authoring what was the first book on Consumer Guide for Synthesizers and Sequencers and Drum Machine. And it was great fun because they started sending me all these great, cool electronic keyboards in the mail for me to test out and write about. So that was a real adventure. And in the process of doing that, I also got involved with some animation software that used video camera input. Essentially, it was very early days of virtual reality. Using that software, I designed a game called Eatabug, which I licensed to Nickelodeon TV and became the first VR game on national television. So for a period of time, and this was 1989 when I first did it, which is a good two decades before Microsoft ever came out with the Xbox and the Kinect VR platforms that now there are in millions of people's homes. So it was a little ahead of its time, but it was great fun to do, and you can still find it on YouTube. There's examples of this show, Nick Arcade, and Total Panic that I programmed these games for. There was always some musical component to it, because I never let go of doing the music, and I had a lot of fun doing all this, you know, crazy virtual reality.
And you've also written a kids' musical appropriately titled Smelly Feet.
Well, you know what? When you have kids, you can't help but write a lot of silly songs. And I had all these silly songs sitting around, and one day I thought, well, you know, maybe I should put these together and do some kind of musical. A song of mine that always got a great reaction from kids was a song called Smelly Feet. about a boy named Pete who's got very smelly feet. He's always cracked up at that song. And so I wrote a musical called Smelly Feet about two best friends who spent a whole day trying to find a cure for Pete's smelly feet. a lot of silly songs, a lot of goofy interactions. And it was a hit in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, 2 years running. And we've had some U.S. productions as well. One of the things on my agenda is to finally put out an album and a video of the musical Smelly Feet. It's fun, silly stuff, and the kids have always gotten a kick out of it.
Well, you're headed back to the U.K. soon for more touring there and, of course, in the United States as well, and still making music, still writing and doing great stuff. It's a real treat to talk with you, Dean. We got to get you up here to the state of Maine for a show so people can see what you're doing and listen to you in person as well.
Well, I appreciate that invite. I'd love to visit you guys and do some gigs. Any venue booker listening, just give me a shout.
All right.
And thanks again for having me, and I would invite your listeners if they want to find out what I'm up to music-wise and gigging-wise, go to my website, which is deanfriedman.com. Drop me an email and stay in touch.
That sounds great. Dean, great talking with you. Thank you so much. Continued success, and we hope to see you on the road somewhere.
Thanks a lot, Rich. You take care.
10 minutes to go before the top of the hour on Downtown. Let's head into the break with a little bit of that song we talked about from Dean Friedman. This is a little bit of I Miss Monica.
I miss Monica with a cute beret and her pouting lip. She made the most of her internship. We learned back then loose lips sink ships. And the scariest thing in the news was a picture of Linda Tripp. I miss Monica. I miss Monica. So busy raking the mud, the sanctimonious skin star. He wasted.